From the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Wednesday, September 25th. I'm Abby Larico. While corn and soybeans dominate the Midwestern landscape today, some farmers are integrating strips of native prairie back into their fields.
To a conventional farmer, this looks like a weed patch with a few pretty flowers in it.
A look at how farmers are using prairie strips to improve their soil and water quality. That story coming up after this news on The Gateway. The Board of Education reached a decision to fire St. Louis Public School District Superintendent Keisha Scarlett. St. Louis Public Radio's Lucretia Wimbley has more about the vote and Scarlett's response.
Keisha Scarlett says she plans to fight for her job after the City of St. Louis Board of Education on Monday voted unanimously to terminate her 3-year employment contract. The board hired a third party to look into her hiring practices and other personnel issues 2 months ago, but board members declined to say what the investigation found. Scarlett says she did nothing wrong and that her decisions were always to the benefit of students and the school district. She says she was placed on administrative leave by the school board in late July without any warning and that she hasn't been contacted by anyone since. She'll plead her case at an appeal hearing before the end of October. I'm Lucretia Wimbley, St. Louis Public Radio.
Police have arrested another minor for making threats of violence against a school. KSDK reports a student is charged with making terroristic threats against Normandy High School. Police say the suspect is a student in the Normandy School District. That student allegedly threatened a school shooting, quote, in the immediate future in an online post, which another district student saw and reported. North County police say investigators found evidence to quickly secure the charges against the student who's being charged as a minor. This comes as schools across the region and the country face an uptick in bomb and shooting threats posted to social media since the start of this school year. The state of Missouri executed Marcellus Williams on Tuesday for a 1998 murder his supporters say he did not commit. St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Littman reports.
Officials at the prison in Bon Terre, Missouri, pronounced Williams dead shortly after 6 p.m. He used his final statement to praise God. Media witnesses say he appeared calm. Williams has always maintained he had nothing to do with the killing of former St. Louis Post-Dispatch reporter Felicia Gale. St. Louis County Prosecutor Wesley Bell came to agree with that position. Earlier this year, he launched an unsuccessful effort to throw out the conviction. Bell said in a statement that Williams' execution did not serve the interests of justice. The Midwest Innocence Project called it a, quote, grotesque exercise of state power. Gale's family did not make a statement, and they did not witness the execution. While they believed Williams was responsible for the killing, they had said they did not wish to see him die. I'm Rachel Lippman, St. Louis Public Radio.
Williams was the third person to be executed in Missouri this year. Elijah Gant, the East St. Louis man charged with first-degree assault against Ferguson police officer Travis Brown, will be arraigned on felony and misdemeanor charges today. 28-year-old Gant is expected to appear in St. Louis Circuit Court on 12 charges, including first- and fourth-degree assault against a police officer. Police say Brown was trying to arrest Gant for damaging police property during a protest in August when Gant knocked Brown to the ground, causing his head to hit the pavement. Brown was in critical condition for weeks after he was injured. Now his family says he is stable but remains in serious condition. Illinois renters facing eviction can once again get help from the state to stay in their homes. Alex Degman reports.
A federal program paid for through COVID relief money stopped accepting new applications in May after helping thousands of renters. Now, the state of Illinois has started a new program that provides up to $15,000 for people with cases pending in eviction court. The money can be used for back rent dating to March 2020, court costs, and up to 2 months of future rent. Renters are eligible for the court-based rental assistance program if they make 80% of their area's median household income or less. Both the renter and their landlord need to apply together. I'm Alex Degman.
The secret may be out on the identity of the undisclosed buyer who purchased the Riverfront Times back in May. St. Louis Public Radio's Jessica Rogan reports an LLC in Texas appears to be the new owner.
New RFT executive editor J.D. Davis registered RSC Ventures 2 days before the sale was announced. A company called Ready Set Cam and its owner Max Anderson seemed to be part of the paper's ownership. The RFT has been flooded with articles ranking OnlyFans creators since then. Anderson explained why he focuses on adult content internet businesses on the Damn Good Day podcast 2 years ago.
15 of the top 50 websites on the internet by traffic are porn sites.
Today?
It's like, yeah, it's freaking massive. It's like, you know, no one wants to talk about it, but it's huge.
Anderson's businesses place OnlyFans articles on popular websites, which now includes the Riverfront Times. I'm Jessica Rogan, St. Louis Public Radio.
Agriculture replaced nearly all of the original prairie land in the Midwest, but a growing number of farmers are incorporating strips of prairie into their row crop fields. These colorful corridors help with soil and water quality and wildlife. As Harvest Public Media's Rachel Kramer reports, there are efforts underway to expand the use of prairie strips.
In a wide gap between two cornfields, Lee Tesdell points out native grasses like big bluestem and wildflowers.
Here's another one. This is wild quinine.
We're in a prairie strip. Here, it's around 40 feet wide, roughly the size of a county highway. This line of native perennials stretches to the horizon.
To a conventional farming, this looks like a weed patch with a few pretty flowers in it. And I admit it looks odd in the corn soy landscape that we have in central Iowa.
Tesdell has three prairie strips on his century farm. One reason is to help protect his soil from strong winds and heavy bursts of rain, which are becoming more frequent.
I'm trying to be more climate change resilient on my farm.
Research shows that converting as little as 10% of a corn or soybean field into a prairie strip can reduce soil erosion by 95%. Above ground, the prairie strip's wall of stems act like a speed bump for runoff. Below ground, their extensive roots anchor layers of soil and absorb excess water. Prairie strips also keep nutrients like nitrates and phosphorus in fields and out of drinking water, and they provide critical habitat for pollinators and grassland birds, like this dickcissel. The conservation practice got its start at Iowa State University about two decades ago. Lisa Schulte Moore was a big part of that. During a recent outreach event, the landscape ecologist and 2021 MacArthur Fellow says large patches of prairie are vital. But
we've done research to really solidly show that a little bit of prairie, you know, can do a lot, right?
Schulte Moore credits early adopters and partners across the Midwest for helping prairie strips gain traction. But she says a monumental shift happened with the 2018 Farm Bill. That's when they were added to the Conservation Reserve Program. Nearly 23,000 acres of prairie strips across 14 states are enrolled. Landowners like Doug Doty get annual payments for taking vulnerable land out of production. He converted 16 acres of his north central Missouri farm into prairie strips in February.
So it's a little bit ugly this year, a lot of weeds growing up.
But Doty says it will get prettier with time. He knows this because over the last decade, he's turned several hundred acres of highly erodible ground into prairie. Doty says his conservation strategy makes financial sense and improves downstream water quality. He doesn't understand why more farmers aren't taking action to keep valuable nutrients in their fields.
And when cattle break through the fence or a gate is left open, we have a sense of urgency to get those cattle back in and fix the fence, right?
But there is a cap on the number of acres that can go into CRP.
So I think the intention of USDA dollars to adopt conservation at scale is really great, but voluntary conservation has its limits.
Omar DeCook Mercado worked on CRP policy as part of the Iowa State Prairie Strips research team. Now he's with a Colorado-based nonprofit. MAD Agriculture helps conventional farmers transition to regenerative ag practices like prairie strips.
They're climactically adapted in the Midwest to thrive. So it's a low-hanging fruit, essentially, on a farm. To bring in prairie on a Midwestern farm is a path of least resistance to incorporate biodiversity.
MAD Ag and Whole Foods Market recently launched a pilot program with four farms across Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Montana to cover the initial costs of prairie strips and provide on-the-ground support. Back at Iowa State, Lisa Schulte Moore is also looking at the economics to scale up prairie strips. Someday soon, she hopes more corn and soybean fields will keep some color after harvest.
I dream of driving across Iowa winter and seeing various shades of greens and yellows and oranges rather than brown.
Those colors would reflect at least a small return of the prairie that once flourished across the Midwest. I'm Rachel Kramer, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a collaboration of public media newsrooms in the Midwest and Great Plains, including STLPR. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.